and welcome to episode 85 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
All right, so this week's episode is basically like a supersized discussion of The Walk in a way. First, we're going to do a full review of The Walk, and then we're going to talk about this absolutely insane virtual reality experience that some of us got to do at screenings and junkets. So first off, the review, and I think Angie's taking that one.
Yep, so here's the synopsis. In 1974, high wire artist Philippe Petit recruits a team of people to help him realize his dream, to walk the immense void between the World Trade Center towers.
This very accurate.
Yeah.
I just had to make that point.
Okay. This is something that happened in real life, so there's a good chance you already kind of know what it is, or if you saw the documentary Man on Wire, then you know exactly what it is. Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays Philippe Petit, and Robert Zemeckis directed it. And it's basically, my thing when I came out of the movie is basically, as a 3D IMAX experience, which is how we saw it and which is kind of what their marketing is playing up, it's fantastic. Like, I was, you know, I was, like, sitting in the theater and I was so tense. I was, like, gripping the armrest for dear life and, like, basically
and my
trying
arm.
To, like, disappear into the chair because it's, like, really intense. Like, you know, he makes really good use of the IMAX and 3D to make you feel like you're really there with him and, like, seeing it. And even though you already know how it ends because, again, it's something that happened in real life, like, I was incredibly stressed out in a fun way. However, as a movie, it is not a very good one. It's, like, kind of like a middling biopic mixed with, like, a middling heist film. And no one really has anything to do except for Joseph Gordon-Levitt and none of the characters seem very well thought out. There's also this, like, touch of magical realism a la Forrest Gump that, at least in Forrest Gump, it was consistent and kind of made sense with the themes and, like, how the characters view the world. In this one, it just feels like he's like, well, I've got to do something. And the whole thing is narrated by Joseph Gordon-Levitt in a consistent but kind of stilted French accent. It's the kind of thing where you're just like, I don't know why we bothered with the French accent thing.
I guess he kind of talks like how the real Philippe Petit talks, because like I watched couple of interviews after and I feel like just because maybe because I'm not French, it almost will never sound natural to me. And it's also just the fact that like it's I write about this a lot in my review, the fact that it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you know. I think he did a really good job in this movie, and I think he's one of the main reasons that this movie works at all, just because he's so insanely likable. Like what you just said before with the narration, when he stepped out on screen and like not only is he narrating the entire movie in this silly accent, but he's also doing it from standing on top of the Statue of Liberty's torch.
Yeah, because the Statue of Liberty is a gift from the French, just like Philippe Petit is a gift from the French.
Oy, it's yeah, and that's so ridiculous.
That's actually
looking.
The part of the movie that really started to get to me was just how thick it starts layering on how important Philippe Petit is. And like, don't get me wrong, what he did is really interesting and it's pretty cool. And yes, according to different accounts, it did recontextualize the towers for people in Lower Manhattan who had previously described them as looking like giant filing cabinets. However, since he did The Walk in 1974, we have other reasons to have associations with the towers. So when, in the end of the film, they keep talking about how Philippe Petit gave them a soul, and there's, like, this one long lingering shot of the CGI towers, and they talk about how he was given a pass to the tops of the towers that was supposed to be good forever. It's so, like, thick and schmaltz and sentiment, and they linger on it. It's like, we all know what you're getting at, and this is kind of gross. Like, it's just too much.
I didn't find it gross. I actually found that approach to it, like, I don't know, much more touching than any other depiction of the Twin Towers I've seen since 9/11.
Like, it tipped for me. There was, like, a point where I was like, this is interesting. This is showing us, like, where the towers came from and a time before we associated them with the tragedies of 9/11. But that last shot, and especially, like, when I realized, like Angie pointed out, when I realized that they were being like, look, he's like the Statue of Liberty in that he came to New York and gave us this great gift. I was like, okay, settle down, Frenchie Pants. Like, it just got a little too, like, it's so indulgent. I think it reminded me a little bit of Unbroken, where I think Zemeckis is so in awe of Petit that he loses any sense as a filmmaker of not even objective, because fuck being objective, you don't have to be objective, but like he wants so much for him to be this grand hero that he takes away all these things that would have made him a complex character. Like all of a sudden him and his girlfriend are having a fight about how Petit is not respecting the rest of his team, and it feels out of nowhere because the rest of the team are barely characters. They get introduced so slapdash. It's like, oh, this is Jean-Pierre, aka Jeff. Oh, this is Albert. This is Stoner Spinelli guy. Like, there's, like, no reason why all these people are brought into the fold. And then the girlfriend, who seems like she's going to be important, spends the entire third act of the movie just staring up at the towers and going, oh, I hope everything's okay. She has a French accent. That was terrible. Let me do that again. Oh, I hope everything is okay. There you go. Nailed it. Nailed it. But, like, the thing is, like, they give her nothing to do in the third act. So either change the history and give her something to do or cut her from the movie, because, like, it doesn't make sense to just shove these people in the movie just because they were there in real life when you give them nothing to do in the script. And Zemeckis, like, co-wrote the script, so I blame him for this.
To me, well, it didn't read as so much as he respects it too much. Just it felt to me like Zemeckis made the entire movie so that he could do the big IMAX section at the end. Like, that was the part of the movie that he put so much care and thought into. And I'm not saying, like, the rest of it is completely lazy, but it felt half-hearted. Like, as you pointed out, there is a conflict at one point in the movie where, you know, like, apparently this guy who wants to walk the Twin Towers, which is a crazy dangerous thing to do, apparently is kind of difficult. But the movie makes no indication of it up until this one moment, and then it just kind of over. Like, you know, stuff like that. Like, all the characters are so thin. His relationship with his girlfriend is absurdly, like, thin. Like, as you point out, you think she's going to be important, and then she's really not. And in fact, the most romantic scene in the entire movie is like, it's a scene with him and this guy that he's not romantically involved with. And I don't think Zemeckis intended it this way, but it reads as like, it was like really romantic. And I was just like,
because it's so intimate. Like, that's the thing. We saw them have dinner together. We saw them talk about dreams, and we saw him build their various maquettes of what he wanted to do. But like, him and Charlotte Le Bon, who is lovely in this, and who is the one who basically looks like Winona Ryder 20 years ago.
She's lovely. It's uncanny how much she looks like Winona Ryder.
Every time she's on screen, I'm like, that's not Winona Ryder. That's not Winona. Even when I met her in person, I was like convincing myself, I was like, she's French Canadian and she's not Winona Ryder, and it's fine. But like, she's given so little to do, it's very frustrating. And when I interviewed her for the walk, she said she was expressly told not to meet the real Annie because they didn't want to, quote unquote, like, taint her portrayal of it. Because in real life, and those who watch Man on Wire will know, like, they had a relationship that ended spectacularly badly. Yeah. And, like, they don't want to allude to that in the walk, and they want to just kind of, like, walk away from it. So instead he goes, so-and-so-and-so-and-so went back to France. Also, Annie. And then they just say like a lovely goodbye, and it seems like an amicable parting, like they shared this wonderful time together and now it's over. But that is not what went down.
Well, they do throw in that tiny tease with her and James Badgedale's character, that like awkward little interaction. I think that was meant to hint that her relationship with Philippe was crumbling.
I think that's just James Badgedale being charismatic as all get out. He steals this movie. He is the Michael Pena of this movie.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, they're in New York and they're trying to buy like spy gear or whatever, and they go to his shop and they're speaking shitty about him in French, and he says in French, like, you think you're the only ones that speak France in New York? And then he's like, Jean-Pierre, people call me JP. And like everything from that moment on, I was just like, more James Badgedale. And like, he's really fun and charismatic and actually creates a sense of New York that Robert Zemeckis' CGI New York is like struggling to make happen.
Can we also talk about his comically New York-y cops?
New York cops. They're so New York. Like, literally, like, they call him an SOB. And, like, I loved the New York, because, like, when the cops show up, it's literally, like, Keystone Cops, but, like, super, super New York version, where everybody talks like this. They're like, hey, guy on a wire, get down, we'll go get some bagels. Like, it's amazing.
I feel like that was done almost purposely to a degree. It's like, everything you guys are picking on right now, that's kind of why I appreciated the movie. Because when I first found out that he was making a movie about The Walk, I was almost anticipating some sort of, like, you know, a little darker, like, dire circumstances. This guy who's, like, slaving away at his models and all this shit. Even though Philippe Petit was, like, a pretty, like, funny, lighthearted guy. But he also had, and they hinted this a little bit, he had some, like, serious anger management issues and control issues. Those were the parts that I found most interesting in the movie. But overall, what I loved so much about The Walk was how much fun it was. I mean, the first half of the movie, it didn't work entirely when I first, like, experienced it. But as I got used to it, it had, like, all the stuff in France had, like, a dreamlike quality to it. It's a very uplifting, fun take on the story. And I just thoroughly enjoyed it so much.
I wouldn't have minded that if it were consistent, but it feels like this movie is two things jammed together. It's this whimsical story, and it's interesting because when we did the junket, they gave us two books as, like, the swag, and one was Petite's book about the whole thing, and one of them was a children's book about him walking between the towers. And I feel like that's a very good description of what this movie tries to do. It tries to be the quote-unquote real story, but it also tries to be this kind of childish, wonderful, like, whimsical version, and I don't think the two things lock in right. So for me, the last 30 minutes where it's just him doing The Wire is amazing. And, like, you know, we can all vouch for the fact we all sat in a little row, and, like, we were, like, jerking back in our seats. At one part, Angie was, like, gripping at my arm, and I had my hands, like, just raised on the armrest. Like, it's weird because your brain is telling you, like, you know you're in a theater. You know this isn't real, but it looks so real. And you can hear, like, the world around you. You can see little taxi cabs jetting by. And it was, like, that part of it, no matter how wonky as hell I found the movie itself, I would tell people, like, if that appeals to you, go see it in IMAX 3D because this is an experience like Gravity where I felt there and in a really profound way. And that I really think Zemeckis killed. But when it comes to, like, the emotional through line of this movie, I don't think Petit is a character you can relate to. He just feels too larger than life and too out there. So I think it's a mistake to try to be like, look, he's just like us.
Well, I completely disagree. And I think it's mainly because of Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Like, I'm totally convinced that as a leading man, he could do just about anything and I will fall for him. There's something about him that I find just so insanely charming. And even though from start to finish, I never looked at him as Philippe Petit. I always looked at him as Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing Philippe Petit. That never ruined the movie for me. Like, not for a second, except for maybe, like, the first 2 minutes when I was just adjusting.
I mean, I get what you're saying, both. I get what you're saying, Perry. Like, I think that it's, you know, I get that he was actually going for a whimsical, lighter, happier, more upbeat version of the story. And I don't have a problem with that. I mean, last week we reviewed The Martian and we talked about how one of the things we loved about it is how it doesn't spend time on, like, the darkness of the soul, but, like, you know, human ingenuity and, like, you know, love and happiness and, like, that kind of stuff. So that's great. My problem is that, to me, it didn't feel earned necessarily because you don't really get a good sense of what's at stake or what's driving him or what's motivating him. It's kind of like, it's a little bit like the complaint I had after I walked out of Black Mass, where I walked out and I was like, I mean, I spent 2 hours, like, you know, I understand what happened to this guy. I don't really understand why it happened or how it happened or, like, you know, why this was so important to him. And I'm not, you know, and I kind of agree that it's such a crazy thing to do that I think the movie does it a little bit of a disservice by acting like, oh, yeah, you know, sometimes people are really into their art and they do this. I mean, yeah, we've all been there. It's just like, no, we fucking haven't. And it actually makes his accomplishment seem a little bit less impressive than it really was, because you don't get a good sense of, like, what would really happen if he, for example, couldn't pull it off. What would happen if he got caught? Why this was something that he was so passionate about that he was willing to literally risk his life to do it.
Yeah, they keep talking about it in these big terms of it's a coup and it's going to change the world and all this kind of stuff. And then they keep doing all these speeches about ambition and about art and about passion. And intellectually, I understand what The Walk means for him. But, like, emotionally, I don't understand stepping off that tower. And I think that's a big problem. Like, for me, what I thought Man on Wire did so effectively was that instead of trying to get you to understand Philippe, it tried to get you to understand the people who helped him do it, because that was a more attainable goal. And so you understood why they were driven by the passion. And then the question of that film is, how does someone do something like this? And it leaves the audience to ask that. In this, they want you to understand why he does it. And I walked away still going, I don't understand.
I will say, I mean, to Perry's point, it is, I'm not going to say I was bored or that I, like, hated this movie. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is, as you say, even if he never disappears in the role, he's incredibly charming. And you're right, he's one of the reasons that this movie works as well as it did, and, like, that why I had as much invested in this movie as it did. But I do feel like if it weren't for that, like, big sequence at the end with the actual, you know, the walk, then it would just be, like, a really mediocre biopic mashed up with a really mediocre heist film, and then, like, you know, someone sprinkled, like, fairy dust on top of it to make it
whimsical. Yeah, there's lots of charm to it, but I think as a movie it fails.
Yeah, I clearly disagree. I thoroughly enjoyed the whole thing from start to finish. I like walked out of it with a little bit of a pep in my step and appreciating this wonderful city that I live in and feeling nostalgic for the Twin Towers. I've seen Man on Wire, obviously. I've also read his book, To Reach the Clouds, and I really had a hard time imagining what this could possibly bring to what I already knew about his story, but I felt really enveloped in the whole thing, and it felt like I was up there to a level that I've never experienced before, and I think this is just a fantastic, I think this is a really fantastic crowd-pleaser version of his story, and I highly recommend seeing it.
All right. I would say if you're going to see it, definitely see it in IMAX 3D, because regardless of how you feel about the rest of the film, which clearly I thought was fine and Perry liked, and so we disagree on that. Regardless of what you feel, how you feel about the rest of it, the ending sequence is something that if you're going to see it, you're definitely going to want to see it in as immersive an experience as possible.
I second what Angie said.
All righty. So that's it for the review portion.
And
now we're going to
speaking of immersive experiences.
Seriously, now we're going to talk about the Walk virtual reality experience, which we believe was done on some sort of PlayStation, Sony PlayStation.
Yeah,
whatever.
I know it was a PlayStation, so, but I forget.
It was designed by a company called Create Advertising, and actually, like the tech that was running it when we did it was like, I was like, "Have you done this before?" He's like, "Yeah, I've done it a million times. I made it." I was like, "Oh." Oh, you're a genius.
Kudos to him.
Well, then he specified, he's like, I was the project leader, but his name was Jake. I don't remember his last name, but he was lovely and very patient because,
Sir,
like,
if you are listening, thank you, you're amazing.
All right, so basically, let's paint a picture of what this thing is. So they set it up in two places. First, we got to experience in the Lincoln Square Theater in Manhattan by Lincoln Center, and then we got to experience it at the Junket, which was way downtown. So what it is it's like a gigantic standee-type poster. And there's a little rope, a fake rope. It looks like it's like made of tape. It's basically just to give your feet the sensation that you're stepping on something. And you put on this virtual reality helmet that has headphones on it. It's got speakers on it. And you actually see what Joseph Gordon-Levitt his character is seeing in the movie. Like down to the tiny details on the roof. You could turn around 360, look down, look up. You see everything just like he did in the movie, and what you're supposed to do.
They smartly don't put your body in there so you don't have a weird disconnect moment.
A certain studio could learn from that. So you step out onto the wire, and it's supposed to give you the sensation that you're actually walking like he did, and you go, you know, oh so far, and then they turn you around and you come back. And I've done a good deal of virtual reality lately, especially because the past 2 years, that seems to be like all the rage. And you know, they're all cool to a degree, especially if you like the movie. There's something fun about doing a little different experience. But I will say, I've never felt so immersed as I did doing this. That like that sensation of just like feeling the rope on your feet too. I mean, I feel like most movies or most companies, whatever, that set one of these things up probably would have just had you walk forward with the stupid helmet on. But it's amazing how much different the whole thing feels when you can actually feel it. Like, it's not like it's off the ground at all. It's taped to the freaking floor, but it still feels like
you
can fall off.
You are at most like a quarter of an inch off the ground.
But you do have to balance. It's high enough that you actually are forced to balance on it. And it was funny because the second time I did it, because I did it the day we saw it at the theater, and then I did it the next day at the Junket, I was kind of full on, like, on one foot and, like, trying to balance. And the guy was like, are you showing off or are you falling? And I was like, mostly the latter. Because, like, it's silly. And it's like, you know you're not that high up. Like I said about the movie, your brain is telling you, like, this is fine. You're fine. But then, like, you can hear the wind blow past your ears. And you can, like, see so far below you. They use the actual renders from the movie. And it's weird because they have you walk 4 feet and then turn around and walk back. And when you turn around and see the roof, it's for some reason like more profoundly realistic to you, I think, because you can just see the bric-a-brac on the roof and the equipment they used, and it's really jarring. And they actually told us that when Angie and I went on the Saturday, there were two people ahead of us that put the headset on, listened to the little spiel, because at first you heard Joseph Gordon-Levitt and you're like, the wire, blah, 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 being high above the city and all that stuff. And then it goes to the point where it's like, and now you walk. And we watched two people not walk.
Yeah,
and
the guy the guy told me when I asked him about it, he's like, oh, like only half the people actually make it all the way across. And across here, again, means like 4 feet. And he's like, and like a quarter of the people never even take a single step. And it sounds crazy, but when you put on the helmet, you can completely understand it. Like, they've seriously, kudos to the people who designed this, because it really does feel like you're up there. Like, you know, the guy was like, oh, well, you know, take a moment to, like, look around. I looked around, I looked down, I was like, whoa, I know it defeats the purpose of virtual reality that I'm going to try not to look around, but I fucking can't, or I'm just going to, like, you know, die right here. I'm going to have a heart attack. And it's genuinely terrifying. Like, once I had it on, I could completely understand why a lot of people just decide, nope, can't do it, it's good, no. Yeah, kudos to them, seriously.
So...
yeah, it's really profoundly effective. I would actually,
it almost, because, you know, I was telling you how, like, when I walked out of the movie, I was like, well, the IMAX part where you're on the walk and you feel like you're there is the best part. To me, it almost felt like I walked out and I was like, well, this was kind of like that, only even more intense and shorter. And, I mean, you know,
yeah.
Without the rest of the movie.
Maybe that's why they're not touring with this anymore. They said, oh, we're done touring with it in America. And I was like, why now? Yeah. Like, this seems like
it'd
the time
nice
you should tour with it, because...
it'd be nice if more of the virtual reality experiences that are movie themed had, like, more of an interactive quality to it. Like, I think this was well designed in every respect, but I feel like the thought that you could change the course of events in it is what made it so special. Like, any other VR I've done is basically just, like, walking you through a story and blowing wind in your face.
A bunch of people ask me, like, do you fall? Like, no, you can't fall. And honestly, that's good, because, I mean, like I said, 50% of the people didn't want to do it to begin with. If you could fall, I can't imagine anybody wanting to do it, because it's terrifying enough to be there.
And there's the tech guiding you. And, like, I'm very clumsy even on regular solid ground without a VR helmet. So I was, like, clinging on to that man for dear life.
Well, wait until you see the video of me, like, thumping on either side of the wire with my boots. Because I think I might have touched the wire.
You took one step, completely missed the wire, and then declared, no one can do this. To be fair, you did have really thick boots on, which, like, when I did it, I had, like, Converse on, so it was a little easier to feel that line. But I cracked up that you repeatedly...
he does wire shit with, like, ballet slippers and barefoot. Like, you can't do it in combat boots, sorry.
No, you cannot. You were hilarious.
I am proof of that. All right.
But, I mean, we were all a mess on it. I actually saw, because I got video of mine, too. Like, I saw all three of us being a total mess at it. But it was really fun. It was such a cool experience. But, yeah, I think it's like, you know, since you can't do the VR anymore, friends, if this sounds interesting to you, I do think seeing The Walk in 3D IMAX is really cool. And, I mean, I know that's a lot to ask, because that's a chunk of money to go do all that stuff. But, I mean, it's a ride. It's a cinematic experience. It's really fun.
Alrighty, well, so that is a wrap on episode 85, our The Walk episode. You guys know the deal. Please go to iTunes, where you can subscribe to our podcast, and please rate and comment over there as well. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter, @popcornprosecco. We have Facebook, where it would be awesome if you could like us. And then also, all three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, do you want to go first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter @AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
I'm @ChristyPuchko on Twitter, KristyPuchko, and I write all over the internet, so you can follow my career highlights @decadentcriminals.com.
And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is @PNemiroff. So thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next week.
I make my way to the top, and I find myself standing on an island floating in midair on the edge of the void.